Welcome to the full Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is Owen Tracy recording at 4:12 p.m. and that is a Eastern summertime, and I'm on a cruise right now, so I think I have to give a call out to Inmarsat because they're the people that provide the satellite internet connections, and it's almost seamless that I have complete access to everything, including the Bloomberg, while in the middle of the ocean. So that's really quite handy. Well, we look at the Nasdaq, and it has broken out to a new high. It had hit a new high last week, but it extended the advance in here today. I was reading an article just now that 50% of the advance since the end of December has come from just four shares. So we know, I think if we had to guess what those are, we could probably figure that out. It's definitely Amazon and Facebook. Amazon is continuing to extend its rebound. It is now back above the $1,900 area. It's climbing back towards the psychological 2,000 area. Well, people who will have been familiar with this trend know that it paused at 1,500, it paused at 1,000, it paused at 500. So I think it's reasonable that it paused at 2,000. But of course, then the next target that people will be thinking about is the next big round number, which is probably around 2,500. So that is why people have been buying the dips. They are anticipating that this precession will continue. But of course, the decline that we had from 2,000 down to just about 1,250 was much larger than anything we'd seen previously. That was a serious inconsistency. If we continue to go straight through 2,000, well, then I think it is really quite likely that we are moving into bubble territory. This is really rather symptomatic of the late stages of a cyclical bull market. That we get a worry about an inverted yield curve, then everyone forgets about it and says, oh, well, it doesn't really matter. Then the market powers on to new highs. That was certainly the case in 2005 and 2006, all the way through until for most of 2007, the market had been rallying, and then it started to become much more choppy and rolled over in 2008. So perhaps we are in that kind of scenario today, where we've had the inverted yield curve, and there's now there's people starting to doubt whether that was our really a signal, or whether it's really different this time because of all the extraordinary measures that central banks have taken. But nonetheless, stock markets are looking really quite firm. Now, there is also, of course, the possibility that we are getting a buy the rumor, sell the news kind of scenario with the trade war. There have been continued utterances from the Trump administration that to expect a positive outcome. But there is also the potential that that along with an agreement on trade, that there's going to be some form of quid pro quo, and that the USA might have to accept that its companies will also face the kind of oversight that they're demanding from Chinese companies. And that is a significant concession. Well, the S&P 500 is within about 10 points of its all-time high, and this is looking still like a very clear recovery scenario, and that this range isn't all that different from what we saw in 2015 and 2016, as long as the low below 2,500 holds. Well, there is the potential, of course, that we're going to get some pause of consolidation when that trade deal is eventually announced. But that hasn't happened quite yet, and then the bigger question is whether that consolidation is going to happen above the previous peaks or in this current area. So this d still does look like a pretty bullish environment generally. Now, one of the other, I think, significant things that happened over the weekend was the pop that we had in the oil price. Point that I've been pointing out over the course of the last few weeks has been the consistency that of the trend that we've seen since the end of December. The series of ranges, one above another, the fact that each of these ranges has paused around a $5 increments. So we had a pause at 62.50, we had another pause at 67.50, we had a pause just below 72.50, and now the price is pushing onwards. But the size of the pullbacks has certainly contracted. We had approximately a $4 pullback between January and the beginning of February, and it was pretty similar between the end of February and the middle of March. But the little concession that we had in the region just below the 72.50 area was very condensed. And then we've had a very clear upward break, and that was on news that the Trump administration is rescinding the free passes that it had handed out for countries to continue to buy oil from Iran. Well, Saudi Arabia came out and said that they would ensure that any shortfall from Iran they would make up for, but that hasn't stopped the price going higher. Now, if this trend is going to remain consistent, the next place to we can anticipate there to be a pause would be somewhere around the 80, well, the sorry, the 77.50 area. But it may be quite mild. I think it is quite likely now that we are going to start to see the pace of the advance pick up, because the most recent one of the consolidations was so mild, and there's a clear potential that we're going to see the price push back up towards the $85 area. Well, the other, I think, significant point is that because we have a backwardation and it's right across the curve all the way out to 2024, that there's no real incentive to hedge, because you're just hedging for prices that are well below where the prevailing price is today. And that is something that impinges the potential for oil companies to go out and borrow and to continue to drill it until at least that price starts to move up in future terms up to economic levels. And at $62, we're just not there yet. Well, that suggests that there's potentially another $10 advance in oil prices before we start to see any real demand for hedging activity. And then, even then, as long as there is a backwardation, that's unlikely to be a very significant threat. So I do think that there is potential here for some additional upside in the oil price. Now, when we think about the Europeans' stock markets, I was particularly interested this morning when I was looking at the news. And even on the top European news on Bloomberg, there was very little news about Europe. And I think that is symptomatic of just how bearish sentiment has become, because the only thing that anyone wants to write about is the ECB's monetary policy, the problems with the populist administration in Italy, and the fact that they continue to pay a bit more than just about everywhere else in the Eurozone for credit, the banking problems, the continued stress that Deutsche Bank and Commerzbank are under. But the stock market has been rallying really quite impressively. It's up from about 325 to 383 over the course of the last 4 months. That this is really a quite impressive rebound, particularly in view of the rather severe pullback that we'd had in the last 3 months of last year. Of course, Europe has been underperforming for a significant period of time, but and then of course we also have the fact that the euro remains weak. So, but the other point is that the euro might be weak, but it is not so weak compared to the rebound that we're getting in the stock market. And the 112 area continues to offer support. I don't know for how long that's going to be true, but at least it is still offering support right now. Then we have the potential that with the somewhat weaker currency and the potential for global reflation, that Europe has the potential now to rebound. Then you have the fact that the peripheral markets are doing better. They're moving back to a position of outperformance, And they've been through an incredibly difficult decade. The austerity is not over, but they are getting really rather attractive interest rates. And this is essentially a carry trade for governments. Perhaps that's the best way of thinking about it. We had a simple carry for the banking sector when we had a very steep yield curve. That the back in the 2009 2010 period, the yield curve spread in the USA was upwards of 300 basis points. And well, today it's only about 20 basis points, but that spread allowed the banking sector to recapitalize itself. Well, sovereign spreads in the Eurozone today are offering these governments a significant opportunity to do something similar, because they can issue new debt today at really whatever maturities they wish at incredibly attractive rates, and that allows them to either refinance or to pay down significant quantities of more expensive debt as they come due. So that's improving the finances of these governments over the long haul. Of course, they need to ensure that they abide by the European Commission's austerity program in order to do that. But I think that perhaps Europe needs a bit of a hug right now, that the sentiment is so negative that there is certainly got to be some value there. Now, what we're certainly seeing already is that the export sector is flying. That's most particularly the case for some of the luxury goods sectors. It's also true of the consumer sector and a small number of the industrials. But what I think people are paying far less attention to is the fact that you are starting to see some of the domestic plays starting to do better. And when, for example, we look at the, I'm just trying to remember, the insurance sector, and not being particularly effective in doing that, but insurance is very much a domestic business and it is now pushing new highs. Well, that at least gives us some clue as to where we might anticipate there to be at least some potential for our performance. Then, of course, if we look at the financials, well, the banking sector is coming right off of its lows, but and I do think that there is potential for banks to do better from here. But then, of course, if we look at the kinds of sectors that did particularly well in the USA when the banks had just about started to steady up, well, it was the asset managers. And there isn't an asset managers index in Europe, but asset managers should be doing better from this particular kind of environment. Now, when we look at what's going on in China, well, the A-share index pulled back really quite sharply yesterday, but it was in positive territory in here today. And there's a bit of ebb and flow from what we're getting here. This looks continues, or at least continues to look like a relatively similar sized range compared to the one put in March. It continues to look like a recovery candidate, but the explosive part of the advance has already happened. Now the chances are we're going to get a more, I think, sedate pace of advance. I really rather do think that there is plenty of scope for additional upside in here. When we look at some of the individual shares, there have been really rather significant moves in, for example, BYD or Geely Automotive, and that's representative of the domestic economy in China, which has been really in the doldrums for the last couple of years because of the campaign to contain the shadow banking sector. Well, that's now over. The banks have been ordered to make more credit available, and that is stimulative to the domestic economy. So I think that's rather important. Then, when we look at what's going on in India, well, all eyes continue to be on the election, but and the stock market is pausing below the 12,000 level. There is a short-term overbought condition, so there's scope for some additional consolidation, but I do think it's quite likely we're going to see additional upside from the Indian market when the results of the election are finally known. Then when we look at the Indonesian market, well, the composite index has been pausing around this 6,500 area for much of the last 4 months, and we've had some significant volatility over the last few days in response to the election, because the Widodo has claimed victory, but it's being contested. And that's obviously something that investors aren't particularly happy with seeing. So that's something that we need to pay some attention to. Now, when we look at the wider Asian markets, then they're taking their cue from these three. When, for example, we look at something like the Philippines, well, the Philippines has been ranging for the last 4.5 years, but it's right in the region of the trend mean, and this is rather the area where we can anticipate some support starting to be found. The big question, I think, for a lot of these markets is going to be the extent to which the dollar can continue to rally. And the dollar index is pushing the upper side of its range, and it wasn't quite able to hold all of the advance in here today, but this still looks like a bullish consolidation. It has firmed from the region of the trend mean. As long as it is doing that, then I think we can continue to give the benefit of the doubt to the upside. When we look at the Asia dollar index, obviously there's a very clear heavy weighting by the renminbi in this index, but it is just about holding in the region of the trend mean. And if it can bounce from here, well, then I think we can give some potential or the benefit of the doubt to some of those Asian currencies. But obviously, a lot is going to really hinge on what happens with the renminbi and indeed the rupee. The renminbi has, and this chart is taking rather a long time to load, but it has been weaker over the course of the last few days. I personally don't think the Chinese want to see it very much weaker than the 6.6 level, or sorry, very much stronger, I should say, than the 6.6 level, and particularly when they need to stimulate the domestic economy. Obviously, manufacturing remains a very significant part of that of the economy, and they don't want to have a stronger currency. This also comes right back down to one of David's sayings, which was that not there's no country wants a strong currency, but some need a weaker currency more than others. And of those countries today, the USA is the one that needs a weaker currency less than anyone. And I think that's one of the more important factors. Well, with continued strength in the dollar, then gold has taken a pause, and it was in negative territory again in here today, but off the lows, still hovering around this $1,270 area on the lower side of the range that's been forming all year. It really does need to bounce from the region of the trend mean in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. Silver prices are now below the $15 area, and right around the this is the upper side of the underlying range, but we do need to see a confirmed bounce in order to really suggest that demand is returning to dominance in here. Well, with the weakness in silver and the pause in gold, that has sapped some of the demand for the gold miners, and that index has been down for consecutive days now, but There is a short-term oversold condition, and it is coming back into the region of the upper side of the underlying range and the region of the trend mean. So this is a potential area of support, but we are going to have to see some support coming through in order to really have something to hang a bullish argument on. And copper prices have also been pausing. It hasn't really been able to push back above this $3 area over the course of the last few months, and it's been pulling back from it over the last couple of days. So, what we can, I think, conclude from that is that people are just not yet willing to give the benefit of the doubt to the Chinese expansion, and that's a factor that I think is probably going to hold it back for a little while. If we start to see China pushing on again, then that is likely to act as a bullish catalyst for interest in the industrial resources. Now, when we look at the Japanese market, it was also in positive territory in here today, and it is steadying above the region of the trend mean. But the second section index is just now testing the 7,000 area. It's been completely inert, really, over the course of the last week. 7,000 represents the lower side of the overhead trading range. This is the level it really does need to sustain a move above in order to really confirm that we're back in a demand-dominated environment. If Wall Street continues to march higher from here, then that is likely to act as a tailwind for just about everything else. But we definitely have short-term overbought conditions. I do think that there is a likelihood of at least some pause in consolidation. The consolidation that has taken place so far in the treasury markets has been rather mild. It's also relatively similar sized to the last two since that low all the way back in the early part of November, and we're starting to see it steadying once more. If treasury prices can continue to hold the region of the upper side of this underlying trading range, then that is going to continue to represent a bond market which is pricing in the potential that we really are at the top of the interest rate cycle. The only way that we can gel the two arguments together is that stock market investors are willing to bet that the central banks of the world are willing to risk forming a bubble in the equity markets rather than risk tightening too much. And that would suggest that they're going to keep tightening until a bubble is completely obvious. And I think there is a real potential likelihood of that. We're at the stage in the cycle where acceleration is a real potential outcome. So even though we have short-term overbought conditions, and I do think we're due some consolidation when the trade war results come out, we do have to be open to the potential that we are in the third psychological perception stage of this cyclical bull market, and it could climax with an acceleration. And I think with that, I will leave you for today, and I wish all the best to all of you.